Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Near FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. On the show today, I'll be joined by David Gillick. During his career, David won 2 gold medals at the 400 metres European Indoor Championships. David retired from athletics in 2014 and has documented the challenge he faced adjusting to the post-retirement landscape in his new book, Back and Track. And I'm delighted that I have on the line David Gillick. David, how are you today?
I'm good, Patrick, and yourself?
Not too bad, David. Thanks. First of all, thanks very much for joining me today.
No problem at all.
So, David, in your book, one of the things in the first few pages, you talk about sports people, and you talk about sports people die twice. First time is when they retire. But the fact that your career, an injury had a major bearing, and that was the major factor in your return, did the fact that it happened to you, did that make retiring that more difficult?
Yeah, I think it did. You know, to be honest, it was probably one of a number of things. You know, as you said there, I kind of had managed to have a little bit of success throughout my career, and that drove me for so many years. You know, trying to get a little bit quicker, trying to make finals, trying to get to Olympic Games. You know, you're working off a goal, you're working off a program day in, week in, month in, year in. You know, you're always looking for the next thing. And I think when I got that injury when I was about 30. It probably kind of sped up my retirement, if I can put it that way, because it got to the point where it was my third injury, and I just kind of had gone through a whole recovery protocol, the rehab, tried to get myself back on the track, and then it happened again, a third time. And I think it's got to the point where I was like, you know what, I just want to move on with my life. And I thought I could do that quite easily. So I think to answer your question, it definitely had a huge role in my decision to kind of step off the track and try and move on as best I could.
Yeah, and an important part in your career, athletics, it's your identity. So when you retired, was it a struggle to kind of readjust and, you know, just to figure out what you would do for the rest of your career?
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it got to the point where I suppose I didn't really have a whole lot planned. Like, yes, I went to college and I had a degree and I went on and did a master's. But I think when I was running, that was all I wanted to do. I was so focused and probably very intense about my athletics. Yeah. I wanted to better myself. I wanted to realise my potential and make sure that I gave a good account of myself. And I was very engrossed in that. It was a lifestyle. It was almost beyond sport. Everything I did came back to running around the track. And therefore, all my confidence and, I suppose, self-belief came from a performance. And it was like that for maybe 10 years. So it almost becomes ingrained that this is your life. And then suddenly when that finished, I was a little bit kind of, you know, the best way of describing it was, I remember waking up on a Saturday morning, and since I was probably about 7, I trained every Saturday morning. Yeah. And then suddenly I woke up this Saturday morning, and I remember kind of like looking out the window thinking, what do normal people do on a Saturday morning?
Yeah.
You know, because for so long I trained on a Saturday morning, and I found that whole kind of transition into, like, if you want to call it normal life, really difficult because my identity was all about running. Like, my confidence came from running, and suddenly when that was gone, I was a little bit lost.
Yeah, and the book is remarkably honest, David, and it's very striking. Just when I was reading the first couple of pages, you're very honest that you really, really struggled, and it got to a point where you were at home and you're actively contemplating suicide. How did you get to such a low point?
I think it was a number of things. I always remember when I first retired, I kind of thought, okay, I'll give myself a bit of time to, like, you know, see what I wanted to do and, you know, maybe explore some opportunities. But in reality, like, I woke up on a Monday morning, I was thinking, right, I need a job. I need to pay the bills. And straight away, I suppose that led to a lot of anxiety, you know, worry, frustration. And that kind of festered a little bit for a while because I took the first job that came my way. And I worked at that for a year, but it involves a lot of travel, a lot of time spent by myself. And through that, then I started to kind of, like, you know, overanalyze things, started worrying about the future, started idolizing the past. And it just kind of festered from there. And I wasn't given myself any opportunity to look after myself. I wasn't really kind of out exercising as regularly. I wasn't eating well. So all of these things kind of began to, it was like a vicious circle. And that was went on for a year. And then I thought, you know what, I need a new job. Maybe it's a job. And I packed in one job, got another job. And lo and behold, exact same thing. And that went on for a number of years. And it was just my self-talk as well, which was a huge thing, was very, very negative. And I began to like disengage from interacting with friends, family. I didn't want to go out, didn't want to see people because I didn't want people to ask me any questions. I didn't have the answers. And I felt, coming from sport, you know, you're confident, you're the alpha male. And I didn't want to kind of turn around and go, oh, I'm struggling, or I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. And I just wanted to get home, shut the door of the house and just stay inside and didn't want to kind of meet and greet people. And like I said, that went on for a while, and it got to a point where I just wasn't happy in myself. And that's where, you know, the dark thoughts came in, because it's just a voice inside your head. You just want to quieten that voice. And I think that at that point in time, that's when I suppose the suicidal thoughts began to kind of come to the fore a little bit, to be brutally honest. And that was late 2015. So, you know, I'd probably been struggling for a number of years at this point.
Yeah, and you say in the book, just asking for help, that's the important thing for anyone in a situation like that. Just making yourself vulnerable and just asking for help. And that's a first step in recovery.
Oh, massive step, yeah. And like, you know, you can never underestimate the power of conversation. And I think in the world we live in now, you know, a lot of time spent on mobile phones or computers and stuff like that, maybe virtually interacting with people. But, you know, when you're open and honest, and I think that's the biggest kind of piece of advice I give to people, is be honest with yourself and don't fear, you know, that stigma or the way people will kind of maybe view you. Because what I really learned throughout my whole kind of journey was that once I was open and honest, the amount of people that actually kind of said similar things, and that made me feel like, you know what, I'm not alone. I'm not the only person that kind of thought the way I did. And that really helped. And it all started by a bit of dialogue, a bit of a conversation. And I think one key thing as well is, for me, it was conversation through kind of activity as opposed to sitting down face to face. Because for a period of time, people knew I was struggling, and they would try and kind of, oh, do you want to come out for a cup of tea? And we'd sit down and they'd ask me, David, how are you? The minute that question came up, I just wanted to drink the cup of tea and get out of there. So I'd just say, yeah, I'm grand. And then, you know, finish the conversation. Whereas through activity based, or be it form of exercise, or be it going for a walk, it's almost like, you know, women tend to talk face to face, whereas men talk shoulder to shoulder. I think that really helped. And, you know, my first conversation was with someone who had a similar kind of journey. And like, that was just, you know, a powerful conversation that really kind of helped me and gave me a confidence to go and seek regular help.
And the book is excellent. And you've broken up. What I liked about it was that I've kind of seen self-help books before, but you're basing it on your own experience, and you've broken it up into four categories to kind of improve your life. It's mindset, movement, rest and diet. I just want to ask you something about mindset. I found very interesting. You reference it at the start of our conversation, this voice in our head. You were talking about this chimp paradox, and you said that a technique that works really, really well for you is writing down your negative thoughts and tearing up that piece of paper. Can you just talk me through that and how that works for you?
Yeah, well, like, The Chimp Paradox was a book written by Dr. Steve Peters, who's a sport psychologist that worked with British Cycling back in 2012. And they obviously had a lot of success. There was a lot of interest around their kind of team. And he had by all the athletes said, he was quite a pivotal role. And he talks about this chimp paradox. So basically, it's that voice that we all have inside our head. The dialogue that goes on inside your head. And sometimes when it's negative, and it's negative on an ongoing basis, we tend to believe what we tell ourselves. So, you know, throughout my kind of journey, that voice was getting louder and getting louder. And, you know, through that kind of journey, through counselling and things like this, I began to learn how to kind of, I suppose, deal with that voice. So there was a number of ways that I did do so, but one of them was actually writing them down, like you referred to. That was actually something I used to do when I raced. So when I raced, obviously I got nervous, you know, before a race, you get the butterflies and everything like that. So before I'd go off traveling, I used to write down all the negative thoughts, all the things that were in my head. And some of them were quite like mundane, like, you know, things that were never going to happen. You might fall, you might come last, people think you're going to be useless, all these sort of thoughts. So I'd write them all down and then I'd literally rip them up and chuck them in the bin. I'd get them out of my head. And then I'd write down all training sessions I've done, the times that I've ran, and that was all real. That's all factual stuff that actually happened. And that's where kind of that little technique worked when I was running. But because I was an athlete, now I was trying to move on with life, I pushed all of those techniques I used to use away. And lo and behold, they're the things that actually helped in I suppose the journey post athletics. And I think another area I used to kind of focus on was this kind of 3D technique. And it was almost like, because like I used to spend a lot of time by myself through the first job, that it was a little bit, my internal dialogue would be quite loud and quite negative. So I would try to kind of distract myself. So for example, if I was in the car, I might turn on the radio or turn the volume up or open the window, something to kind of just distract myself, break that chain of thought or conversation going on in my head. And then I'd distance myself. So that's where this chin paradox would come in. So that little voice, he's got a name. So that voice inside my head has a name. And when it's not me, it's somebody else, I can then dispute it. So there you're kind of 3Ds, if you like. Distraction, distance yourself from it. So if it's somebody else, you're more willing to argue the point. And then, like I said, argue it through, dispute it. So that was something that I tried to kind of focus on and therefore kind of put it in the book, because it was something that I used. It was a strategy that I found worked for me. Hopefully it might help a few people out there.
Yeah, and on mindset, another thing related to writing down I found very interesting was the gratitude journal, because you're referencing in the book, a lot of people, we're always constantly comparing what we don't have. But, you know, writing down, you said it works for you, just to kind of, just to reflect on what we should be grateful for.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and again, through sport, you probably always focus on maybe the one that got away or, you know, we need to improve a little bit more, improve a little bit more. But sometimes you need to take stock. And I think, you know, I was very kind of, when I came off the track and I retired, I was a little bit like, all right, I need success. I need success. And how is success defined? Is it by, you know, the size of your house or the size of your car, or is it by your bank balance? And sometimes we can get caught up with that. And, you know, now and again, maybe unplug and get a pen and paper and just write down two or three words that could mean the world to you. It could be a family. It could be healthy parents. It could be a son and daughter. And they're the things that I suppose I really began to focus on, the things that actually matter. And like, success can mean different things to different people. But, you know, we all kind of have good days and bad days. And sometimes on those low days, those bad days, it's no harm just writing down one or two things that you're actually grateful for, or that, you know, remind yourself of your past successes, things that you've done very well. And it's not always about, you know, hitting your targets in work or, you know, making more money. It could be something really simple, like, you know what, I actually called around to my parents the other day and had a cup of tea with them. You know, it could be something really simple like that actually fills that emotional tank and it means something to you. And sometimes they're the things that really kind of give people a huge boost.
And you, in the exercise section of the book, you referenced that one of your steps in the right direction was when you went to the local park run. Again, it kind of links in with, because you're apprehensive because people would be judging you or whatever. But once you did it, you just loved it. And park runs are just brilliant at the moment.
They are. They're brilliant. And there's like nearly over 100 now all over the country. So you can guarantee there's probably one close to your listeners. But, you know, I think that was it. I told myself, you know, again, going back to that voice inside my inside my head was telling me not to do it. You know, people are going to, you know, think you should be winning it. And, you know, the time you're going to run is not going to be good enough. And all, I gave myself every reason to. But I did it. And it was probably the best thing I did, because suddenly I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed the sense of freedom from it. I enjoyed the ability just to switch off for those 30 minutes. while I was running. And, you know, that was a great thing about it. And it kind of got me back enjoying the sport that I did for so long. And, you know, I think through exercise, and look, some people aren't into running, that's fine, you know, whatever it is. But some form of exercise can be really, really great for stress release, can just clear your mind a little bit, you know, and help you switch off. And that's where, you know, I really wanted to showcase that in the book and give people some sample little exercise routines that you can do. And that's a great thing about it. It doesn't have to be 30 minutes or 60 minutes. It can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes. You can do it at home. You can do it in the local field, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I really want to get across and just show how sustainable and also how practical some of these strategies can be.
Yeah, and that's what you say in the book, is that get the sport that fits for you. If you're not into running, go into team sport. So it's just making, and you make the point very well in the book, once you do it enough times, it becomes a habit, and it's just part of your lifestyle.
And that's the key thing, is like fitting it into when it works for you. And sometimes team events can work for you like that, but maybe you've got kids and you've got a busy household and you can't get out in the evening times. Well, then maybe during the day there's 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, it's putting it in the diary. Like, we all have mobile phones now, we have calendars, and we all go by them religiously.
Yeah.
But make sure you put in something there for you. And if it's in the diary, more chance that you're going to do it, and then it becomes a little bit more of a routine.
Yeah, and I just want to ask you about technology, because there was one point in the book where you were saying, the average person, a typical person, will touch their phone 2,617. It's remarkable. And you're making the point that this technology, technology is great. We all know that, and you mentioned that in your book. But it is really, really, it can be something that challenges us as well, doesn't it? Because
Like, if you look at, like, you know, you look at now, like, it's information overload. You can get information from all over the world straight in the palm of your hand, 24/7. So it's very easy just to succumb to that on an ongoing basis, be it in bed when you're trying to get to sleep, or, you know, maybe when you're interacting with, like, having a conversation with someone. So, you know, the mobile phone is a huge part of our lives now. And it's to the point, and even the social media element to it, and you referenced that earlier on in terms of comparing yourself to someone. So again, we just need to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people have a struggle now of actually putting down the phone and maybe switching off a little bit. So, you know, if we're not aware of these things, we can't change it. Mm. And again, alarm clocks, like sometimes, like, and look, I'm no saint. Yeah. My alarm clock is my mobile phone. I'm trying to get away from it.
Yeah.
But the first thing in the morning, that goes off. My phone's in my hand. I'm checking emails. I'm checking social media. Before I know it, you know, social media can put me in a bit of a mood and I'm not even out of bed. Yeah. So, like, you've got to balance things out a little bit.
Yeah, and the second part of the book, you have loads of brilliant recipes and that are quite... well, easy enough to make. Is cooking still something that you really enjoy?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, like, you know, it's like, I wouldn't say I'm a chef.
Yeah,
you know, I'm a home cook and I enjoy that. And I cook a lot at home for my wife, and we've two kids now as well, Oscar and Olivia. So it's busy. But my whole kind of ethos around food is keeping it practical and sustainable. Yeah. Like, that's, you know, simple recipes for the whole family. And obviously, this is my second book. I did a book after Celebrity MasterChef a couple of years ago, and that went really well. So I wanted to build on that, and I wanted to focus on, you know, recipes and dishes that, like I said, are easy to do. So one of the little things I worked on was kind of, you know, making some base sauces and kind of curry paste that you can use in a variety of recipes. So if you make one kind of sauce, well, that could tie you over for, you know, the guts of a week. And that's a key thing, is trying to make things that you can use and also use the ingredients that you go and buy. So if you go, because we all tend to shop the same, we all kind of go and buy the same ingredients or products week in, week out, but sometimes we don't use them all. Some of them end up in the bin. So how can we kind of look at what we buy in the store cupboard, if you like, and kind of reuse that for a week to 2 weeks, cost effective, minimum waste, and nice and healthy as well.
Yeah, and before I let you go, David, you're covering the European Championships. How did you enjoy the experience of covering it?
You know, I have to say, it was probably the first championships that I loved being on the other side of the track.
Yeah.
It's probably taken me a while to get to that point because, you know, I had a career where I wanted to continue. I wanted to keep running. Yeah. And sometimes when you're watching championships, you want to be out there in the action. So for me, it was brilliant. It was also brilliant to go back to Berlin. I had arguably my biggest success in finishing sixth in the world in 2009 yeah. on that track. So it was, you know, it was really nice to go back and just kind of put myself in that environment where I had such happy memories. But I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed being a part of it and interacting with the athletes. Like, I had a great little gig there on beside the track when yeah. the athletes come off, and had to interview them all. And, you know, there's highs and lows. Some athletes yeah. coming off with beaming smiles, other people maybe a little bit disappointed. Yeah. But that's sport, and that's why we love it. So I really enjoyed it, and it was great that we had success as well. Tom Barr getting a medal.
Yeah.
We had Kieran McGean fourth, Leon Reid make a final of the 200, and a couple of young athletes coming through as well, which is vital because we've had such a good summer in the underage ranks as well. So it was brilliant, and hopefully like the team and the athletes can push on from here.
Yeah, and you referenced the young athletes. Irish athletics seems to be in a really, really great place at the moment.
Yeah, like, you know, you could almost say that we've had the best summer ever in terms of athletics.
Yeah.
Because we had major success at under 18 European level. We had great success at world under 20 level with the women's team getting a silver medal in the 4x100 sprint event. Like, and there was five athletes, six athletes in that squad. So the strength and depth is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then obviously the seniors done well at European. So it is in a good place. It's in a healthy place. And it's all about now pushing on to the next level, which is going to be tough. You have to be honest as well. We're going into a world championship year and then into an Olympic year. So, you know, the standards are hard for some of these young athletes to break through, but they just got to keep that element of belief. And you use this season in 2018 as momentum and motivation to drive them on, because, you know, if we can get some of that talent coming through to senior level, we'll definitely be in a completely different bracket, if you like, in terms of an athletic country.
Yeah, that's great. Listen, David, thanks a million for joining us. You've been very generous with your time. Your book, Back and Track, is available in all good bookshops. Thanks again for joining us.
No problem, Patrick. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.